Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Series 2 of The Daniel Morgan Murder. I'm Peter Jukes.
I'm Devi Amir.
And we'll be exploring new revelations from the book by Alistair and me and more of the story which no one thought could be told.
Kind. Generous. I can't close my eyes anymore and see what he looks like, that's gone, or hear, you know, the sound of his voice or anything. But I remember him having his watch was his. Mum always says that he phoned her one day to say, you know, I've got everything that I wanted in life. I've got a wife, 2 children, my own business and a Rolex watch.
That was Sarah Morgan recalling for the first time in public memories of her father, Daniel.
Untold, the Daniel Morgan murder.
Now, Daniel's Rolex watch, taken from his wrist on the night of the murder, there were lots of queries about the watch and suggestions that, you know, we contact watch specialists to track it down. We now have some idea about what happened to that Rolex watch, don't we?
Yes, this is all new information since the first podcast. And we now know that within a month of the murder inquiry being launched, an anonymous male called the incident room, and he said it's 100% John Rees is involved and that he done the business with the watch.
What do we think done the business means?
Well, it's a bit cryptic and the anonymous caller never called back. But if we flash forward 20 years, again, a new bit of evidence. There's a relative of the Vians, Gary and Glenn Vian, the brothers-in-law of Rees, involved in that strange Belmont robbery and also alleged to have been at the Golden Lion car park on the night of the murder. This relative of the Vians said they smashed up the watch and buried it.
Well, if that's the case, then at least we've tied up one loose end.
Yes, but there are so many loose ends. And in this episode, we're going to look at perhaps the most intractable, the most difficult loose end of all. And that's the possible connection between the death of Daniel Morgan in March 1987 and the violent death of DC Alan Taffy Holmes in July that year. Now, just to explain again, this series is really a commentary on Series 1. We didn't want to take the Morgan family back through that traumatic timeline of 30 years. Instead, with the new evidence we found, we wanted to look at things a little bit more analytically. So just to remind us where we are now in April 1987, just after the initial arrests of Rees and Fillery.
Yes, because in Series 1, we told Derek Haslam's story much later on, when he'd become an undercover informant in 1996. But if we're following the strict timeline of events, it's around now, in April 1987, soon after Rees and Fillery are arrested, that Derek Haslam makes an arrest of someone which triggers the whole tragic sequence of events.
Indeed, it was precisely this point in April 1987 that Derek Haslam, a constable in the same area of South East London, made an arrest of a drug dealer called Raymond Gray. And Raymond Gray, after a few days of debriefing, would make massive allegations of police corruption, which would lead to one of the biggest ever internal investigations by the Met, Operation Russell.
And it was that investigation that would lead to the violent death of DC Alan Taffy Holmes. Let's replay from episode one, Derek's account of the death of his friend Taffy.
Alan Holmes had gone to meet Ray Adams, ostensibly he was on the golf course shooting bunny rabbits and he got the shotgun. But I also know for a fact that after he had been sufficiently wound up by OJ, Derek's done you, he's the one that's done it. And he turned up, I'd left, but his neighbour, ex-neighbour, told me that a man fitting Holmes' description had turned up carrying what appeared to be a shotgun, asking for me.
This same shotgun, though never used on Derek Haslam, was used again within days. On the 28th of July 1987, Taffy's wife came downstairs to find her husband's belongings laid out on the dining room table and a note. She opened the curtains to see her husband sitting on his chair in the garden, a shotgun by his side, killed by a fatal gunshot wound to the chest.
I walked into Addington police station and someone said, have you not heard? I said, heard what? He said, Taffy's killed himself. He said, I shouldn't tell you this. He said, you're mentioning a suicide note. His shotgun was laid under his right arm, like that. Shot himself in the chest.
So there are already three strange things about this alleged suicide. The gunshot to the chest.
Yeah, when most police officers who've ever been to a suicide scene know that could just leave you disabled and injured and they eat the bowel or shoot themselves in the head.
And the position of the gun at his side.
Yeah, because the recoil would have thrown it out if he'd shot himself using his foot. Very unlikely the gun would have fallen just by his side, by his hand.
And thirdly, the low blood alcohol.
Yeah, especially in a traumatic death, as Derek Haslam says, blood alcohol usually rises, the bacteria in the blood ferment. Now, Taffy was an alcoholic, and his blood alcohol was very low. It seems to me strange that you become a teetotaler and stop drinking just about the time you're going to end your life.
But we do have now this staggering new evidence.
Yeah, so what we found out in the research of the book is the forensic reports show there were no fingerprints on the shotgun that killed Taffy.
So no fingerprints on the gun. How could this happen unless he was wearing gloves?
No, he wasn't wearing gloves.
Well, it suggests then, doesn't it, that it was wiped clean?
Yeah, like the car, like Daniel's car, fingerprints in a photograph, come the morning afterwards, no fingerprints on the car. It suggests another clean-up.
So let's just remind ourselves why Taffy allegedly committed suicide. He was caught up in what was described at the time by a senior commander as the worst allegation of corruption ever to be levelled at the Metropolitan Police.
Yeah, Raymond Gray, the drug dealer's allegations, concerned quite a few police officers, but predominantly a very senior officer who'd just taken over the head of criminal intelligence, Commander Ray Adams. Now, as part of Operation Russell, there were no less than 12 criminal allegations against Commander Adams, mainly focused on his relationship with various underworld figures.
And unfortunately, Taffy Holmes was a friend of both Ray Adams and Derek Haslam and tried to act as a go-between to find out about the allegations.
Yeah, well, that's how he got himself into trouble, because it is a criminal offence to interfere in a criminal investigation. You're perverting the course of justice. Particularly serious, of course, for a police officer. So as soon as the Internal Affairs Department, CIB2, discovered there was a leak, somebody approaching Derek, they managed to work out it was Taffy. And they arrested Taffy and his mistress, Jean Burgess, subjected them to some quite high-pressured interrogation. And eventually, I suppose, Taffy cracked.
Yeah, because he was in big trouble, supposedly.
Well, he only two choices once he was caught on the hook for breaking the law and breaking police discipline. either he sort of shop somebody else, or he loses his police pension, his job, and potentially goes to prison. And that is not a nice place for police officers.
But the tragic thing here is that, according to the suicide note, Taffy believed Derek had betrayed him.
Yeah, this is an unfortunate and very sad twist of events. Partially accidental, a misunderstanding about a time Derek was wearing a wire. But yes, in his suicide notes, twice, Alan Holmes blames that Serpico Haslam for betraying him.
But according to Derek, that was a lie.
Yep, but it was published in the press. And this is one of the reasons, when we interviewed him on Skype, that after a lot of intimidation and threats, Derek Haslam is hounded out of London.
It was reported in the press, and the Sun saying that I'd taped up Alan Holmes. I know where that emanated from now.
So not only was the Sun involved in this misinformation, but in your book, you know, you say that this was published also by Alex Marinchak and News of the World.
Yeah, for whatever reason, both papers spread the false rumour that Serpico Haslam had secretly taped Holmes, further increasing Derek's isolation and risk of reprisal.
And isn't it interesting that Marinchak was not only covering the story of Taffy in the News of the World, he was also acting as a police informant?
It's all recorded in Operation Russell. Marinchak tipped off the police that he had been told by a police driver that Ray Adams had met Haslam's boss during the investigation. But Marinchak backed off that allegation when he was interviewed by them.
Well, but just going back to what happened with Derek, you know, he then had to leave London, but still worked for the Met.
Yeah, but not as a detective. He ended up liaising with the cause. But even then, he was targeted by death threats.
I mean, it must have been really traumatic, you know, to lose a close friend through suicide and then get blamed for it.
Yes, Derek was counselled by the force psychiatrist, but it's almost kind of comic. By this time, there were so many officers traumatised by police corruption coming to visit this psychiatrist, Dr. Farewell, that he wrote to the commissioner of the police asking him, "What the hell is going on with your force?" Well, Derek says it was like he was having to counsel the psychiatrist.
So Derek resigned from the force in 1989.
Yeah, he didn't feel safe, but he left with a spotless record.
You know, it's such a tragic and disturbing story with the similar elements of police corruption in South London. But let's come back after the break to see if there really is any connection between Taffy's suicide, Derek Haslam, and the murder of Daniel Morgan.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
To discuss this crucial issue, whether the two violent deaths in 1987, that of Daniel Morgan and Taffy Holmes, are connected, we've invited Alistair Morgan back into studio. Hi, Alistair.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Alistair. Welcome back. Now, when did you first become aware of the allegation that the deaths of your brother and Taffy Holmes might be connected?
Well, I can't give an exact date, but I think it was probably April 1988 when I received a telephone call from Derek Haslam, who I'd met in the Victory together with Jonathan Rhys. And he said, "And I believe that your brother's murder is linked to the death of Taffy Holmes."
And when you heard this, what did you do?
I think I made a couple of calls during the course of an afternoon, and I spoke to, first I believe, to Malcolm Davidson, who told me that he said they were still trying to establish whether Daniel and Taffy knew each other.
So they're not confirming and they're not denying it, but that's a whole year after the murder. I mean, is that incompetence?
Well, there's also two inquests, so I think it's probably something worse than incompetence. But let's go through it. We have three witnesses at the moment who say that Daniel and Taffy knew each other. The first one, the most senior one, is like about 10 years later, Dave Wood, who briefs Derek to go undercover, an 8-year undercover mission to investigate Southern Investigation.
According to Derek.
According to Derek, but he definitely was an 8-year undercover mission, wasn't he?
He was.
And he filed intelligence reports. He was an official.
Without doubt.
CHIS, confidential human intelligence source. He was providing intelligence reports back, and he was helped scope out the place to put the bug in. I mean, he was doing everything. I mean, he was obviously legitimately accepted by the police as a good source of information, rated very high as an intelligence source. So that's one person. The other one, independent of Haslam and Wood, is unfortunately a bit problematic, isn't he, Alistair?
Yeah, that's right. It's Jonathan Rhys.
Now, Rhys is always going on about Taffy and Daniel knowing each other, apparently. It's in Haslam Says It. But more importantly, it's in the public domain. It's in an article written by Alex Marinchak in 1989, where Rhys says Taffy and Daniel were as thick as thieves. But there's a problem there, isn't there? Because Rhys is not a witness of truth, according by this point to the Hampshire Inquiry, and we could wonder about misinformation.
That's correct, yeah.
So the whole Daniel Morgan, Taffy Holmes connection, for the moment, hinges on Derek.
He's the only witness who's come forward to talk to us so far.
And let's hear, when we did talk to him, what he said about the Daniel Taffy connection.
But obviously the one thing they both had in common, that they were both Welshmen as well. And that is a sort of a bond, isn't it? So I think there was a pub in Shirley, there was a thing on, and Holmes was in conversation with Daniel. Rhys was there on that occasion. But I never followed it up more. I never went into great depths. I knew old Daniel. I think I'd met him once or twice. And I was unaware that they were friends. But it was just that thing when I said to Alan Holmes, isn't it a bit dangerous, sort of risky, trying to sell a story to the press? That mate, and he said, "Well, Daniel's going to do the negotiation, and that's Daniel Morgan." I think that was the first time I realised that they were a bit intertwined.
There, Derek is saying that he was met with Taffy. Taffy was selling a story of massive police corruption to the press, and Daniel was the go-between.
Yeah.
The funny thing is that figure of 250,000, which seemed inordinate if you just look at it as a newspaper award, he's not the only one to mention that figure, is he, from that time?
No, Brian Madigan says the same.
And he says he was in a curry house, a very specific place, several weeks before the murder. Taffy was talking about this story of police corruption he was going to sell to the press, and Daniel was negotiating it. Now, apart from it sounds vivid to us, curry house, it says a specific memory, it sounds difficult to make up. There's other corroboration for that figure, isn't there? 250,000 for the story of police corruption.
From Brian Madigan.
He used exactly the same man, called him, doesn't he?
And Brian Madigan also sets the conversation with Daniel at a specific time, in a specific location, and what he said.
So there's corroboration for Derek's statement about the weeks before the murder. Then we have further corroboration, don't we, obviously, because he goes and tells the murder inquiry about this conversation, goes to tell Detective Superintendent Campbell, and there is evidence of that in the inquest, isn't there?
There is indeed.
Given all of that, it seems really strange that a year later, the police are still telling the Morgan family that they don't know if Daniel and Taffy were friends.
I personally now, as we'll see in a moment, if you follow it through, I think Alistair was being misled. But let's just start off, let's just turn it on his head a bit and imagine the chances in that small circle of cops and private detectives in Southeast London whether Daniel and Taffy didn't know each other. So let me ask you, Alistair, when Derek approaches you, one of the things he first says to you when that phone call after the inquest is, what's his first line of approach?
He said to me, hi, this is Derek from, you met me in the Victory a few weeks back.
Yeah.
And I said, oh yeah, hi, Derek. And he said, I'm a Freemason, and I believe that your brother's murder and the death of Alan Holmes are linked.
Okay, I thought that was really interesting. Didn't you think, Dee? I'm a Freemason. Mm. Now, just the probability of them knowing them, let's be clear, and we discover this, it's partly in the public domain, maybe new information in the book. Alan Holmes, Taffy Holmes, was the master Bensham Lodge, a big lodge in the Croydon area, I think.
Yeah, he was a senior Freemason.
Senior Freemason, master, and he trained Derek Haslam. That's one of the one of these training sessions in South Croydon. They knew each other. They were in a lodge, definitely knew each other. Impossible to escape. Ray Adams, who's a significant figure in the Taffy Holmes saga, was in Blackheath Lodge. And of course, Rhys, Fillory, Hanrahan and Leighton. They're all in lodges in South East London. There's lots of evidence of that. Isn't there some club they used to go to?
Yeah, it was called Brothers-in-Law. I think it was in Thornton Heath.
Given those fraternal Masonic connections and all the police connections in South East London and, of course, all those pubs, how could Daniel not have met Anne and Taffy Holmes?
Exactly. It seems, you know, they were all in the same circles. They moved in exactly the same circles. I think it would be unlikely that he didn't, shall we say.
But there is another link, isn't there? Because even if we can only guess the connection between Taffy and Daniel before Daniel was murdered, we do know that the Welsh detective was involved in the investigation.
Yes, we have more detail on that now too. Taffy was part of the Central Drug Squad and is involved in this rather extensive operation called the Collection Plan, looking at major drug dealers, just around the time of Daniel's murder, and is involved in an operation called Operation Wimpy, which was looking at drug dealers in South London, and they had one of the drug dealers under surveillance. They had a intercept on his phone. They called it On the Bell in the Days. Well, anyway, Taffy apparently contacted the Daniel Morgan murder inquiry, the first one, with information from an intercept between their target talking to one of the Vian brothers about the murder of Daniel and how a famous London gangster, Joey Pyle, was out of the country trying to find out what was happening before he could return.
So we're back to the Vians and the Hart pub. Well, let's hear what Derek had to say about them.
Well, I knew the Vians were heavily into drug sort of supply. That was no secret. I mean, say down the Harp Public House, which was one Rhys used, and Laurie Bucknell as well, we had his leaving do. They were sort of quite feared. And I was aware that Holmes, what they were doing, they were targeting this, because of this collection plan, they were targeting Joey Pyle, the Richardsons, Charlie Cray, and all these ones. And they were all that lot were all part and parcel of consortiums that were dealing in cannabis from Spain.
Now, from all the work we've done, us, on the book, and we're both pretty convinced, aren't we, that the police were deceiving you or misleading you in 1988 when they told you they were still investigating whether Taffy and Daniel knew each other. And I say this, well, look, let's share with the listener some of the book, because they seriously investigated it back in 1987.
Three detectives on the murder squad followed up these allegations of a major expose of police corruption. DC Kinley Davis, DC Noel Cosgrave, and DC Michael Crofts. They established that Daniel Morgan had been to Private Eye and another paper and expected to get £10,000 for his story. They also tried to contact one of Daniel's known media contacts, Anton Antonovich, at the Daily Mirror. Then they found a third witness to corroborate Haslam and Madigan. Peter Wilkie Wilkins, the former cop who worked for Southern Investigations, also told the detectives that Daniel had a story of major police corruption and was going to sell it to the press. Wilkins claimed that Daniel was in contact with an investigative journalist from a Fleet Street Sunday. Armed with this new information, in June 1987, DCs Davis and Crofts suggested that the murder of Daniel Morgan was connected to a major story of police corruption involving Taffy Holmes, Ray Adams, and the multi-million pound Brinksmat bullion robbery in 1983. A publican in Shirley, who knew both Crofts and Wilkins, recalled them talking about how Daniel was going to the newspaper and thought the murder was something to do with Kenneth Noy paying off policemen. The allegations were taken seriously enough by their senior officer, Detective Superintendent Campbell, that they were told to circulate them on high-priority green forms. Far from being rewarded for their diligence, that summer, Cosgrave, Davis and Crofts were all dropped from the murder inquiry.
Someone clearly didn't want the connection between Daniel and Taffy to be made.
That's right. And they still don't. I mean, there is an amazing reluctance of anybody to come forward about this. It's as if that connection between Daniel and Taffy is too catastrophic, relates to a conspiracy too high up for anybody still to deal with it.
It's such a web, isn't it?
Yeah, and these threads are not easy to follow.
But the question is, who spun this web?
Well, that's what we're still trying to find out. Next episode, we'll go undercover, wearing a wire in the pubs and restaurants of southeast London, as the first Morgan murder investigation morphs into a second inquiry. And we hear, on tape, the conspiracy to kill Daniel a year before it happened.
Episode 3 was produced by Peter Jukes and Devi Amir. Music by Shemaili Mir. Additional music support by Daniel Pike and Incombatech. A Flameflower Duende production.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.